WHD WOGL HD3 Philadelphia.
From the Piazza Premium Automobile Studios, powering your drive with 10 brands and 20 locations.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Kathy Barnett
on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Kathy Barnett Show. Listening to me on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, WPHT 1210. So not only are you guys listening to me here in Philadelphia, but it goes across most of the Mid-Atlantic states. So hello, everyone. Today, I have a special interview that I conducted with two really solid conservatives in the America First movement. One, you're going to hear me talking to Lee Habib. He is the VP of content at Salem Radio. And then you're going to hear a short interview I did with Trish Regan. You guys know who Trish is. She's a conservative broadcaster, used to be on Fox Business, but now is the host of the Trish Regan Show, and two really amazing individuals of their own right. I'm so grateful I had the opportunity to interview them. This was at Job Creators Network Conference, where we were talking to a room full of small business owners who make up about almost 50% of the GDP. So these are people who we should be talking to. Generally, we're not. We're always talking about those on the S&P 500 index, but these particular people at this particular conference represents almost 50% of our GDP. And it was such a privilege to be there and to run into some amazing people. Enjoy. Lee Habib. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yes. Vice President of Content at Salem Media Group. You are here at Job Creators Network talking about Jesus.
Yes.
And you're an Arab talking about Jesus.
That's right.
Crazy. That's something. Well, I know. Well, it's probably not so crazy.
No, it's not actually. Yeah. It's right in the cradle. Lebanon is all over the Bible.
Absolutely. You're right there. Right there. In the heart of it.
As so close
why
as
wouldn't
close
you?
Could be. Why
right?
Wouldn't I?
Now, were you always a Christian,
no,
or did you convert?
I actually wasn't. I converted.
Yeah. From Islam?
No, my parents were, my grandparents were Maronite Christians. My parents left the faith, and I returned to it. I took our family back.
Look at that. Yeah. Look at that. So you are here at Job Creators Network. Mm-hmm. Job Creators Network represent over 30 million small businesses.
Yep.
Represent over 90 million. Employees, small businesses contribute about almost 50% of the GDP, like 46% of the GDP. And you're here in this environment talking about Jesus, talking about the soul, talking about the heart of things. Mm-hmm. Explain that connection.
Sure. I mean, when you're reading the Bible, you're reading about a lot of things. You're reading about abundance and scarcity. You're reading about love, and you're reading about discipline. You're reading about work a lot. Paul talks about work a lot. And idleness, its opposite, sin, and moral obligations and responsibilities, good stewardship. Of what? Of your resources. If you're a farmer, you want to till that soil. That's work. And then you've got to plant the seeds. And then you've got to pray a lot. And then the weather comes. And you have to then till it. And you have to then package it. And then you have to go sell it. This is work. And it's skill. And you have to master what you're doing and become good at it. And this is good. And all through the Bible, work is a good. Work is rewarded.
So how do we get to a culture? Because I do believe that we live in the greatest nation that has ever existed, America. But I believe it's a great nation because it's founded upon Judeo-Christian, or because of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, no doubt.
But the U.S. Constitution is based upon Judeo-Christian values. So we've always had looked at ourselves as a Christian nation, striving to achieve the things you talked about up there. You talked about gratitude, not envying, not coveting other people's property, but being content with what you have.
Yep.
You talked about the talents. You talked about, you know, some people have different talents.
Right.
And of course, in the Bible, Jesus handed out those talents based on their own own ability.
That's right. That's right.
So, I mean, we've all looked at Hollywood when people get a lot of money and they don't have the infrastructure to handle that money, right?
That's right.
So he didn't give 10 talents to someone who can only manage 5 talents,
right?
So you talked about all of that, and we've always kind of recognized that, but prior to this culture, and I almost want to think, maybe, I mean, it's something that's been gradually being chipped away for some time, but now we're resolutely in a culture that you talk about Jesus, even in the church, and people's eyes begin to roll.
Yeah.
How did we arrive at this moment in this culture?
Well, I think it's a lot of factors. You know, the wealthier you get, the more you're not depending on him. You're thinking that the wealth you have, you created. The abundance you have is yours. And so you start to lean less on God in an affluent society. You know, I've been to the poorest of the poor places. I've been to Haiti many times. And there, the Christians lean on him so hard because this is survival, right? And it's all they've got.
Yeah.
The question is, can Jesus survive prosperity in our lives? Right? Do we need him when everything's going good? Are we on our knees praying when things are going good? Because maybe they're not going good. I mean, maybe everything we think is going good is really bad. And then it becomes me, 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 me. And then suddenly you're worshiping your kids, and suddenly you're not on your knees ever. And then you're going to church a few times a month, then one time a month. And then even when you go, you're not really, you're going for ritualistic reasons, not because it's moving your heart and guiding your decisions day to day. And I think it's natural for countries as they get wealthier to drift from God. It's a hard thing to keep God in mind when you're thinking, oh Lord, there are so many other people who have it harder than me.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be selfish and ask you for my small concerns.
Right.
But of course, you're the person who's carrying on the traditions of the church. He needs all of us, and he needs all of our hearts. And when we're not serving him, that's another person we can't reach out to for the kingdom, another person we can't help in the name of Jesus. And then our little worlds get smaller. And then love thy neighbor and go and make disciples of nations.
I mean,
gets lost.
I just want to say amen. I feel like we're in church.
Oh, it's,
and we're not at church.
No, we're not.
And I know that this is being broadcast to the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, covering most of the Mid-Atlantic. And it is not a Christian station. And yet I always ask people, how is humanism working out for us as a country? It's not working out for us. There has to be something deeper and richer and more meaningful. This can't just be it, what we're living through right now. And I sense that a lot of people feel that. And when you said, can Jesus survive prosperity, that hit me, because we have a lot in this world. And as I was growing up, I remember, you know, growing up in the Deep South, and everybody's a Christian, and everybody goes to church almost like 4 days out of the week. And, you know, it was always about just, you know, like you said, Jesus and striving for something better. And now we have a whole generation that, by the grace of God, because of this great nation, has been lifted out of the struggle of survival. I often think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yeah.
Most of us, whether it's because of our own ingenuity or because of the government, are not really struggling in that bottom rung of Maslow's hierarchy of need of trying to find food, shelter, whatever, right?
Right.
And so we have all been lifted up. And you're right. Can Jesus survive? Now, I believe yes. Obviously, the answer is yes. His word will never fail. The kingdom of hell will not be able to overcome him. And yet, can he survive in my heart?
That's right.
In a way that is meaningful, in a way that is authentic to other people, in a way that allows me to lean not on my own understanding, but to trust him even when things are dark.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are there and are searching, especially our children, are searching for something meaningful.
No, you look at all the social indicators. So the things we have today are unimaginable. The richest people in the world did not have an iPhone. Kings did not have iPhones. Supercomputers in our hands. We fly across the country in 2 hours, and everybody can, almost everyone can afford to take a $200 flight.
Unimaginable knowledge.
Unimaginable knowledge at our disposal. And yet loneliness is at record highs.
Yes.
Loneliness. Imagine, with all the Facebook and all this, what is the number one disease? Literally, the CDC and the British health system has now categorized loneliness as the equivalent of smoking 2 packs a day. So we're lonely because the things we used to do that didn't make us lonely, which was go to that church for identity and meaning, and then do the things that church requires, like have a husband or a wife. And if it's getting tough, figure it out, because you're there to help and serve the kids, right? And you're there to serve the Lord.
Yeah.
So, you know, these cultural indicators tell us our kids are a mess, our families are a mess, and this reminds me of something that happened in the late 60s and early 70s. You know, you had a very young generation trying very new things, telling the adults, this is the black communities, the white communities, everybody. Look what happened to Aretha Franklin in her own life. She abandons her dad's church world, right? And maybe for good reason. One of his friends molested her, right? And so, by the way, there are good reasons sometimes that people leave churches, right? They see hypocrites in the church, they see, and they're not young enough to understand that they're humans too, those pastors. Yeah. And so what happens to Aretha is she just do pop music and more pop music, and then her life's coming to a wreck. And by the way, a lot of young people are in the late 60s and early 70s. They're doing drugs. Mm-hmm. They're telling their parents, you're over 30, what do you know?
Right.
They're turning the flag upside down. Yeah. There's racial tension. There's assassinations. There's chaos. And we know who the author of chaos is.
Yeah.
We know. We biblical people know. And what comes of that at the end? The Jesus Revolution comes from that. And Aretha Franklin goes into a church, records Amazing Grace, literally has a religious epiphany while doing it, and actually tells her record label, look, I know you don't want me to do a gospel record,
right,
but I'm doing a gospel
record.
Right,
exactly, because I'm Aretha Franklin.
I'm Aretha Franklin. And Jerry Wexler's like, it's not going to sell. Gospel records don't sell. Guess what? It's the best-selling album of her entire career, Amazing Grace. And it wasn't just the number one album on the gospel charts. It was the number one album on all the charts. Because when people heard the lyrics to Amazing Grace, it struck them.
Yes.
It struck them in the core.
You just have to have the boldness to do it.
And just to say it, right, and to declare it. And she probably hadn't done it or said it or declared it in 7 or 8 years. And then the same on the white, with the white music. It was all just rock and roll and sex and licentiousness. And out of that springs the Jesus Revolution and a whole new brand of Christian contemporary music and a whole new wave of young people coming to the Lord and looking different and acting different in the church, but still coming for the Lord. And
I think we're on the precipice of that.
Oh, I do too.
Right now,
I see
a lot of young people are not buying in to the foolishness of, you know, the chaos and the angst and the drama and all of that on either side.
Right.
I love how you said a few moments ago in your speech that Jesus was not a Democrat or a Republican.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and it takes some time to grow out of that whole partisan, this is my tribe kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And there's no better way of doing that than traveling across the state of Pennsylvania, traveling on a presidential campaign, and actually talking to people and listening to people that, whether they look different, act different, come from a different background, but they're speaking principles and values that resonate, right? Vivek, a Hindu, a practicing Hindu, and he perhaps behaved more like a Christian than most Christians I know, right?
No doubt.
But if I had stopped at his tribe, his affiliation, I would not have seen that here's a really great person who is smart and who really wants something that is good and real.
Right.
And like all of us, searching for what is true, what is right, and where is my place in life. And I find a lot of young people are right there at that moment right now, but they're looking for something real and they're rejecting the political facades.
No, no doubt. There's no doubt. And I would also say that I've never seen a young generation. I'm so hopeful for this young generation.
I am.
Because they're looking for meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
And I lived in a college town and always will be near college students, because it's always easy to look at that next generation and go, I mean, every generation always does this, though. And, we had it tough. We had to walk 10 miles. Humans are humans, right? And if anything, this generation is facing things none of us ever touched. The images coming at these poor kids every day. This fiction that you're going to, like, somehow post your beautiful life, curated life on the internet and be ghosted by friends. I mean, the things that can happen on the internet that could have never happened in real life.
Yeah.
The kind of bullying that escalates on the internet, which would have been relegated to the couple of bullies everybody knew in the school.
Yeah.
Everybody knew the three bullies.
Yeah.
Now everybody becomes a bully on the internet.
Because
you don't have to use physical force or be a psychopath.
But you don't even have to use physical identity.
No. You don't even have to be yourself. That's exactly right. So, and then all the porn. I mean, I remember, and you'll laugh, if we ever wanted to see a picture of a naked girl, we had to go find a Playboy somewhere. We had to go to great lengths to find it. And those pictures today, you can see on television. These are airbrushed.
On Disney.
Yeah, on
Disney. You can
Disney,
see those on Disney.
And so, and I'm not saying, oh, let's go back to the 50s, because there were a lot of things wrong in the 50s. But the way we all were raised, in terms of less chaos, less outside influences, getting in the way of the primal influence of the parent and the child, schools that actually taught and reinforced the values of the culture, and schools that taught reading and writing and math. And if a kid got out of line, that kid was in the dean's office. And then when your dad got the call, that dad was always taking the side of the authority and not taking your side. Like, he didn't want to hear it. And now, and this is on parents, the parents will take the kid's side, just period.
Even if they're wrong.
Even if they're wrong, and especially when they're wrong.
You know what?
Remember
the video, I think they were running a 400 in track, and the girl with the baton started beating the other girl upside the head.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it became, no, see, I'm the victim.
Right.
I know I beat you upside your head and you had to go to the hospital, but I'm the victim.
Yes.
And everyone is looking like, oh, you know, pulling out the violins. I'm like, no, this is wrong. You know, we had tragedy where one student stabs another student in the heart. And the moment I heard it, I just fell to my knees and just started crying out to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
One, for that kid's mom who was stabbed.
Yep.
Also for my own 19-year-old son. Like, I cannot imagine the kind of pain. How do you get there to that moment? But what shocked me, immediately it became political.
Right.
Immediately it became about race.
Of course.
Immediately the father who... I don't know why they were out there so immediate in front of the camera, but regardless of that, I saw a father struggling to find, like, some kind of understanding and meaning, and to see. We will continue with this special edition of the Kathy Barnett Show in a minute. See you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
My side of the aisle, piling up on him in his time of great distress.
Mm-hmm.
The kid who shot an innocent man walking down the street in the back of the head suddenly rise to become a hero.
Very strange.
And I'm thinking, how did we get here? Like, the human, for so much emphasis that has been placed on humanity, there seems to be very little of that going on right now.
Yep.
How do we get out of this?
Yeah, look, and this gets back to Jesus, right? There's this what's happening in the media world, and then there's what's happening in our world. I love going into students, and there'll be, let's say, 200 students, and I'll always start off saying, how many of you think America's never been more divided? They all raise their hands. I said, okay, I'm going to ask you to lower your heads now, and we're going to turn out the lights, and I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I just need to raise your hand, but you can't look either way, okay? I say, how many of you believe in love? Almost every single hand goes up. I said, how many of you met the right person, the proper person, would get married? Almost every hand went up. How many of you, if you met the proper person, might want to have a child? Almost every hand went up. And how many of you would do that because of love and wanting to pass on what you love to the next generation? And so what I was amazed at in asking those questions, and then I came out and I said, look, you think you disagree about everything, but yet on the most basic human level, you're in community. Then I said, okay, let's do a couple more exercises. How many of you have fathers you know and love?
Mm.
This is when it got rough. and you saw people hesitate, I said, raise the hand or don't. This is for the girls and the boys.
Yeah.
I says, how many of you have mothers you know and love? There were three times more hands that went up.
Yeah.
And then I said, okay, this is just for the guys. How many of you want to be the guy who gets a girl pregnant, leaves, and leaving that boy with a broken, empty heart?
Yeah.
How many of you want to be that guy?
No.
Not one person raises
their
hand.
I don't love to do that.
And then I say to the girls, how many of you, because you didn't have a father who properly loved you, is going to seek love through a child, meets a guy, gets pregnant, the guy leaves. How many of you want to be that single parent without a loving man in your life?
Yeah.
Not a single girl raises their hand. I said, now gentlemen, together, let's say this. If you don't want to be that guy, don't be that guy.
It's a choice.
Let's say that. If we don't want to be that guy, and they say, if we don't want to be, I say, no. Say it and claim it. If we don't want to be that guy,
mm-hmm.
don't be that guy. If your daddy did it, you can forgive your daddy and you can be the dad your dad wasn't. Let's say that. Let's think that. Let's do that. And then be friends with people who think that way. Then I go back to the same thing with the girls. Now imagine if our school, and these kids ate it up. Like they were thankful.
Yes.
They wanted that. They wanted to know
somebody
what was
to
possible.
Speak truth.
Someone to speak truth to them. And then they always line up. And the sociology professors and the political people on the right and the left are missing that conversation. Because if we had, think about this, the married women vote twice as much for less government, more freedom, and more faith, which is the reason I vote Republican. And if Republicans weren't for that, and Democrats were, I'd be for them.
Mm-hmm.
My vote is up for rent every 2 years.
And as it should be.
And you have to earn it.
As it should be.
I am not a permanent member of any tribe
mm-hmm.
of any kind, including an Arab tribe, just the American tribe. I'm a part of the American tribe and the bigger tribe, the Jesus tribe.
The kingdom of Jesus.
And these are my two tribes, and one is much higher.
Right.
The Jesus tribe is much higher than the American
right.
tribe. It's not even close. And we have to remember that as Christians, too. America, 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 America. When's the last time you talked about Jesus with a stranger? When's the last time you just said, hey, can I pray for you for something? Right? When's the last time you just walked to somebody who looked like they were hurting and say, is everything okay? And touch them on the leg or the shoulder without fear. And then when they tell you what's going on, you tell them about some struggle in your life and how Jesus helped, and then invite them to a church.
Yeah.
I mean, this is on us.
We used to do that.
We used to do it all the time, and now we're afraid.
And it was common.
We were afraid of late because we were fearing we'd offend people, which meant our walk was really weak. Because what does the Lord talk about more than anything else except love? Fear.
Yeah.
And it's constant in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Yeah. Fear not.
And it really
fear
gets
not.
Back.
Do not be afraid.
And it really gets back when you start talking about fear is that really, it's because I don't believe that he is who he says
this
he is.
This is the bigger point. This is the bigger
and
point.
And that is where I have had to really take myself to task, right? Why am I fearful?
Right.
And it is at that moment that I find I have made him small. I don't really believe that
right.
he has a plan, that I don't really believe he cares about me or that
right.
he sees me. And it is at that moment. And then I'm going to have to pause. And
yeah.
it is a moment by moment exercise at times.
It is. And I think the thing we have to do, and he asked us to do this, and he taught us how to do it, right? I mean, Jesus could have mentored 1,000 people at a time. 100,000 people at a time. But Jesus' math was 12.
Yeah.
Just intimate. 12. It's intimate, right? And so do we have a group of 4 or 6 who, when we have these feelings, we get on a phone and we pray with them? Do we have those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Help me through this.
Mm-hmm.
Help me through this.
Yeah.
Would you mind praying for me?
Well,
the Lord's driven for me. Yeah, I haven't been thinking about the Lord.
Yeah.
Let's go out today and let's just go see opportunities we can find together to evangelize.
Yeah.
Or to just love people. Forget even the evangelizing. Just love people because that's a way to evangelize.
Yeah.
Just to be out and meeting and greeting people.
Instead
and asking how you can help them.
Seeking for honor, what I have found is let me find someone I can honor. Like, let me go find a food shelter and contribute some time there.
Right.
So thank you for that. Last section of what I want to talk to you about before you leave is, I mean, because how often do you get to talk about, things of this matter this is a secular event. It's not a Christian event specifically. A lot of Christians are attending.
No question.
But this is, we're not to be relegated to only talk about Christian religious stuff on a particular day and in a particular setting.
This
but
is
it
point.
Is, how do I live my life as authentically as I can and be myself, right?
Say, look, give it to these secular folks. They live their life loud and proud everywhere out there. And I give them all the credit in the world for their personal conviction. If we had a quarter of the personal conviction that they do, where are our Christian pride parades?
I say that on the radio all the time. I know this isn't a Christian radio station, but I'm a Christian. And everywhere I show up, this part of me is showing up with it, right? I can talk about economics and everything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And divorcing ourselves. I think the biggest reason we do this is the biggest reason, because I've now really dug in. Our house became like a ministry after COVID. And my wife has an amazing testimony about the healing powers of Jesus. And she admitted in front of 500 women that she had had 3 abortions because she had been abused, sexually abused by a man, and she would not have his baby. And then she thought she would forever be damned. And then she just started to do silly things with her body, with her life. And came the Lord to just get her to forgive the guy who abused her, to forgive her mother for not being there, forgive her father who was never there.
Right.
And then all this peace descended on her, and this love descended on her.
Yeah.
And everybody saw it. Like, they knew her before and they knew her after. And then the question becomes, will you get in front of a room and tell people who you were? And that you're not perfect now, but that you can turn to the Lord and friends and repent and turn. And it's a never-ending struggle, but that's what we were put on the earth to do, to help each other, to love folks, and it's good.
It's not a destination, is what I'm learning.
It's a journey.
It is a journey.
It's a total journey.
Every moment, you sharing your wife's testimony, it's very similar to my, you know, I gave my life to the Lord when I was 19. Now, I grew up in the Deep South, so everybody's a Christian,
but
I really gave my life to the Lord when I was 19. And I don't know if you're aware of my story. My audience would be aware of a part of my story is that I am the byproduct of a rape. My mother was 11 years old when I was conceived. And in this part, I haven't really shared it, that my mother was forced to marry my father.
Wow.
He was 21 years old. And there was a lot of abuse that went on in that relationship. My mother eventually leaves, and now I'm back with my grandmother. And my childhood, I didn't know. Like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And I was loved because of my grandmothers, primarily on both sides of the family. But growing up, my mother made sure my brothers and I knew how horrible of a man my father was, right? And so now, fast forward, I'm 19 years old. I gave my life to the Lord, and I am really into Jesus, right?
Yep.
And now I'm getting ready to go to my father's mother's home, and my father is there. And I'm like, what am I gonna do? Yeah. Like, I hate this man, right? And I was so concerned. And as I'm walking up to the house, my father walks out, and I look at him, and it was just by the, I just felt love. That was not of my own.
Right.
And you're right, the chains that begin to break, the things that you have seen before, now you don't see it quite the same.
Right.
And the ability to just be able to live out loud a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
All of these things are journeys. We all have our stories,
right?
And they all range on the spectrum. Your testimony may not be mine, but we have one.
Yep.
And it is our responsibility to share it out loud.
No doubt. And to not worry about how people react. The other night, I'm driving with Brad Anderson, who's on the board, and we were taking an 8-hour road trip from Naples to Savannah. Because we said, why do we need to do connections? Let's just drive together. We stop halfway through at what looks like a wings place. As we walk in, it's a wings place. It's a little bit like Hooters. And we're thinking, this isn't appropriate. But I said, you know what, Brad? Come on, let's sit down. Because you know what? There's a space here, right? And I always know there's a space there. So what do you know? A young lady comes up. She's probably in her early 20s. And she asks us what we're doing. She's very lovely. And she says, oh, what brings you here? And Brad says, well, you know, we're coming to Savannah for this conference. And my friend's going to give a speech. And she said, what's the speech going to be about, sir? And I said, it's going to be about Jesus. It's going to be about grace and love and gratitude and envy. And she just lights up. She goes, oh my goodness, I want to tell you a story about my younger brother. Do you mind? I said, no, I don't mind. She goes, he had drifted from the Lord, and he was a great baseball player, and he just worshiped baseball. And we lost him. The church lost him. And he says, good kid. And she goes, well, what do you know? About 6 months ago, the new captain of the baseball team is a born-again Christian, and he looks up to him, and he invites him to small group on Wednesday nights. And then the next thing you know, he's coming to church on Sunday. He's getting baptized this Sunday.
Look at that.
He goes, can you see Jesus?
Faith.
And so Brad and I are sitting there in a place that most Christians wouldn't walk into.
Right.
Shame on them. Now, if you're going there to stare at the woman, then you shouldn't be going in there.
Right.
But if you're going in there because maybe you can serve, well, then you should go in there.
Right.
Right? Because that's, you know, Jesus didn't sit next to the prostitute and run. Right? He's sitting there drawing in that in the ground, right? And you wonder what he's drawing in that ground, because he's drawing people who are leaving, right? Mm-hmm. The people who are judging
people
her.
People looking at right? their own sin.
They're looking at their own sin. They're right out of here. And so that's us, right? And so if we can be a little more Jesus and say, I'm not judging that person. She has to work. Maybe she has someone in her life that doesn't think this is a good choice. And maybe God's working through her, right? I don't know his ways. I just know the way and the speed with which she let up when I said the word Jesus was a miracle. And I'd always wonder, would I light up that quickly, right? If someone said the word Jesus. And we both walked away from that just going, uh-oh. And so we can't be fearful of what a man or woman might say. And I've been doing this now for 11 years.
Yeah.
And I have had only, even in New York City, I do this. And I don't get many, especially, would you mind if I pray for you? No, I'm just not into that. I said, that's okay.
Yeah.
But I can pray for you anyway.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Right? And so there's a way of doing it, right? Yeah. And Jesus was gentle. I mean, he was rough on the people who deserved to be rough.
Yeah.
But he was gentle with everyone else.
Yeah.
And we got to remember that gentleness, right? And that patience. Because that's what he wants from us, that kindness with that person. And not to be judging that person as we enter that equation. That my sin and their sin are no different. There's not a ranking of sin. Mine's pride. I mean, I don't cheat on women. I don't do drugs. Mine's worse. Mine was, I don't need you. And I do it a lot. I got this. I'm not praying for the next 4 days. So I think adultery isn't as bad. I don't think homosexuality is as bad. I don't think stealing is as bad. Pride, I think, is the worst sin of all of them.
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about pride. So when we're ranking sin, make sure you rank your sin right up there with all of them.
Right.
Because we'll tend to say, well, I'm a sinner, but not like,
right, and not like that,
not
right?
Like her. So those are the things I think we have to be right.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I could sit here and talk to you forever. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for living by example. You know, sometimes we feel very lonely out here doing the things that we're doing and yet feeling as though, no, this is my path. I'm going to walk this path and trust God has a plan.
He does.
So it's very good. It's very encouraging to see people because I just have to say the Americanization of Christianity is revolting to me. It's infuriating to me because the American form of Christianity would not go into a place like you described because it's all about appearance versus recognizing we all have a story. And if not for God, there go I, right? Like that could be me. So I really appreciate you. And
I just urge you to go into these places because you know what? I had that conception of American church until I started getting out myself more. And then I bumped into Christians just like me everywhere, doing mission work all over the place.
But not everywhere. So much with the four walls.
Oh, no, no doubt. No doubt.
People are beginning to move away from the four walls.
Yes.
Jesus, I'm the church.
Right. And he is the church.
And everywhere I go, there he is.
We were asking too much of those four walls. And those four walls aren't, they're a gathering place, but they're ascending place too. They equip and then we send. And then Monday through Saturday is our job to go out into the world and love people. That's it. And smile a lot. Because smiling and leaning in and being gentle to people is just, they want to know what you're smoking. Right? And they'll actually say, what are you smoking? I'm going, well, you know, I don't smoke. But, you know, this is what's gotten me through my hardest times. And so what is that? And then you get them to lean in a little bit. You go, well, let me tell you about what Jesus did in my life. Because I'm just like you. I was a skeptic.
Yeah.
I didn't believe a word of it. I thought it was rubbish. God sends his son to be born in a woman's thing. Because that's how it felt. So that's how we connect, right?
Yeah.
We connect because we remember. We're looking for those connection points.
We and all then, are, whether we are. Know it or not.
And so that's what God's given me that direction and now has been cultivating that talent because I just keep going out. And the more I go out, the better I get at it.
Yeah.
So,
wow. How about that?
What a crazy idea.
Hubby, thank you so much. I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This was fun.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Trish Reagan, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate
it. Oh, my pleasure. Good to see you, Kathy.
Yes. Well, listen, you just finished a panel a few moments ago. And as I was sitting there, I heard you say, and I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, right. Why? We now control the White House, the House, and the Senate. And we're all biting our nails because we're not 100% sure we're going to get the tax cut, job acts put in permanently, and several other things. Why is that?
Well,
why is it that we're all over here biting our nail? This is clearly a good thing for small businesses. That's why we're here at Job Creators Network.
Look, I'm as perplexed as you, but I think it comes down to everybody's got sort of their individual goals for their individual states, and they may not always be aligned with whatever's the best possible outcome for the nation as a whole. And so everybody's going to kind of, you know, say, well, I want this, I want that, and not cooperate to get this through. But I cannot stress enough, and it's just critical. If you look at how well our economy fared prior to COVID happening in March 2020,
yes.
I mean, it was amazing.
It's a no-brainer.
We were just, you know, everyone
felt it.
Right. And that was why lower taxes, less regulation. A big part of that was this job that was the Tax Act. And if we don't have that extended, I think it's going to be really frightening for small businesses who are already feeling a lot of pain, having gone through the last 4 years with inflation, et cetera. So it's important to get it done and get it done early, because you want that certainty.
Yeah. And we want it also before the economy and for small businesses. But we have a really critical race coming up next year, midterm. I think we need to do this sooner rather than later. And when I heard it may be completed 2 months from now, I start cringing, because Democrats are not going to get less radical, more sane. There's so much that can go wrong in that period of time. Like, do you think our leaders understand this?
I hope so. I mean, there's been some talk among actually Republicans, right? Oh, we need to raise taxes even more. Let's just stick it to the rich and stick it to the businesses. And I'm like, okay, guys, come on. Like, wait a second.
What are you talking about?
What's happening? Are you switching sides? I mean, that kind of populist message of let's just have businesses pay more, let's just have whoever pay more. I mean, it's not in keeping with who
it's
we are as
working.
A society. It's not in keeping with our tradition. We are a meritocracy.
Yeah.
And you know what? We may not be perfect, and capitalism may not be perfect,
right,
but it's the best damn system we got. And you go anywhere else in the world and you tell me.
How about that?
Yeah. I mean, this is where it's going on, because we have had the best policies. And historically, we've had that. So if you're going to actually turn back the clock and try and change this into something else, like some people want to, whether it's AOC, whether it's the woman in Texas who keeps making so much noise, Jasmine Crockett,
Ratchet.
Come on, right?
It's this is a performance.
Or Bernie Sanders.
This
even
is not serious.
Well, I'd like to think it's not serious. I actually had this conversation with a Democrat the other day who really express such conviction that this is the direction that we need to go in. America needs to become a socialist system. And it hit me, like, they're actually serious. We're sort of, you know, talking about what the Dems' plan would be for 28. And I'm like, well, you know, if they're smart, they'll probably put in somebody like Gavin Newsom, who, you know, I know has been a disaster in California, but maybe looks the part and can kind of move to the center a little bit. And you see him moving to the center. You saw Gretchen Whitmer out there, you know, on stage with Donald Trump. She's trying to move to the center. Why? Because they realize that there's much more opportunity in the center, which is what Donald Trump has been able to do, you know, in terms of economic policy, et cetera. And what I'm hearing from a lot of Democrats is, no, actually, there's no interest in the center. There's interest in this radical movement. And we have to recognize that and be the antithesis to that.
Believe
radical.
Them. Believe them when they tell
when
us
they tell
who they
that.
Are.
That's
right?
What they want. That's what they want. And so I'm hearing, well, you know, somebody who's moving to the center as a Democrat stands in the shot. Okay, fine. So I'll just say, you do that all day long. You put up the AOCs of the world, the socialists of the world.
I know.
And fine. But I think America really is looking to us for the conservative movement for responsibility and for the ability to get the train back, you know,
on the track,
right?
Yeah.
Because we need a successful economy, and it's so important. I can't state this enough, that the economy's got to grow, that we've got to see inflation come down.
Yes.
This is the key to having, again, more Republicans in Congress.
You're right. I think so. Yeah.
If it doesn't happen, you know what's it's well, going to be well, a repeat of what
we've already before. Gotten a taste of how bad things can go and how quickly that can happen. Last question. Mm-hmm. Cory Booker sitting on the Capitol steps, and it hit me. Those are the exact same stairs Newt Gingrich ran down almost 30 years ago with that paper in hand. I got a contract. We did it. A contract for America. And as I was watching Cory Booker and everybody else sit up there singing these ridiculous songs, that imagery hit me, and I thought, these people really are lost. They have nothing to offer us. And so they're doubling down in some of the most ridiculous ways. We find out USAID is sending $50 million to Gaza for condoms. And what does and what do some of the Democrats do? They go out and riot that we're letting these people go. They're so disconnected. Like, what is their, like, do they even know who they are or what they're doing?
This is what I've said to Democrats, to friends that I know. I'm like, guys, like, go to the middle of the country. Go somewhere other than New York City or Los Angeles, because you are so out of step, whether it's allowing people who are born as biological men to compete in girls' sports. I mean, come on. I mean, like, I don't care. Like, you've just lost the story at that point, right? Like,
nobody, you've lost the plot.
No, you know, it's a fringe element of wonky academics at Ivy League schools that think that's okay. But the rest of the country is like, no, that's not fair. That doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of these issues that they've just gone to the extreme on. And I'm troubled by it. I mean, I guess the good news is for Republicans, hey, you know what? Like, you keep doing that and you will continue to lose. And so I think this extremism is part of who they are. You see, like I said, some members of the Democrat Party trying to walk it back to the middle, but the party's not there. They've got this extremist base that's pushing everything more and more to the left. Okay, fine. You know what our job is? We're going to be the adults. We're going to get the economy back going strong. We're going to get inflation down. You look at oil prices right now, they've plunged. You look at, you know, even consumer spending, it's still strong, Kathy.
Yes.
I mean, we've still seen, I looked at some Visa numbers and
the job market is still strong right now.
The other day, and people are still spending.
Yeah.
So let's see how this goes. There's a lot on the table right now. I get all the uncertainty with tariffs, et cetera. I think that will get worked out in the coming weeks and months. And so then the other key is, okay, we need tax cuts to be extended. And once you have that, you have the sort of the baseline for a successful economy. And if you have a successful economy and a safe nation, right?
Yes.
Safety is a big part of this.
Safety is important.
The challenges that we faced on the immigration front, I think that you have a recipe for success, and people will look back and it can go really well or it can go really badly.
Yeah,
that's it's either all these things.
But we have to work
together. But that's why everybody needs to be on the table.
I love
it. In the same place. And I get everybody's got, you know, little pet projects that they want to work on. But
and what would you say for to conservative for us, for the people on the ground? What should we be doing during this time, sitting back watching?
Oh, people that are just conservatives that maybe voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, call your local.
Stay active.
Yeah, congressperson. Like, make sure your voice is heard, whatever you can do to make sure that they know that you care about this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and you look at what, for example, some of the folks here at JCN have been able to do. It's amazing because there's such a grassroots campaign. I say to people all the time, like, you want to get involved. There's places to get involved. There's organizations to be involved with. And you're
find
part
your
of
way.
That movement, right, to help this country succeed. So in any small way, shape, or form, you can be part of this. Even if it's just calling your congressperson and saying, hey, I want the extension of the tax cut.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much,
oh,
Trish.
Pleasure.
I appreciate
Great to
it.
See you
Yay.
Again. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you all so much for listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, crossing over into New Jersey, Maryland, and a lot of other places. Delaware, I've gotten people calling in from Tennessee, Michigan. So thank you all for listening. Join me next week, same time, same place. Blessings.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.